and at 3 p.m. at the Bellport United Methodist Church. It's Grace Notes Concert Series, performing Bach Concerto in D and C minor, Sonata No. 2 by Yasia, and other pieces. And if you're a local venue, band, or promoter, and you want to get your gigs on the concert billboard, send an email to Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And as always, thanks for listening to the concert billboard right here on 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. Oh boy, time for another edition of Off the Wall. And getting started by the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Jumping in a little early tonight because we're not on for very long. In fact, getting a late start, getting an early kickoff because another basketball game tonight. Tonight is women's basketball. So if you were bored by the men's basketball last week, well, tune in this week. It might be a completely different story. Plus, it's a home game, too. Won't get our asses kicked quite so badly. Well, this really has been one of those historic weeks, hasn't it? I know about a week ago, I had heard the first reports of the earthquake coming into the studio, but there wasn't really enough information to know just what might happen as a result. And as we all know now, the results, I don't think, could have been any worse. 7.0 earthquake hitting... right in the middle of Haiti by Port-au-Prince and destroying the city, killing an unimaginable number of people in the hemisphere's poorest country. It's like the perfect storm of misery, and all many of us can do is just sit back and watch in horror. You know, it's a strange feeling when you see something horrible happen. I actually saw a couple of things. I saw this unfold on TV. And a little while before that, I saw a house burn to the ground locally. And it's obviously worlds apart as far as level of tragedy, but there's tragedy all the same. When you see something happen so quickly, when you see something that right away changes everything for at least one person, or maybe a quarter of a million people, or maybe even more than that. One moment you're just living life normally, and the next moment something horrible happens. Could be fire breaking out, could be an earthquake, could be a car crash. I don't know if we've all experienced this. I remember back in 9/11 when that happened, just seeing it unfold in front of me. One horrible incident after another, and realizing, wow, everything's changed from this point on. It's no longer the way it was. And it's incredible how quickly such things happen, and how we live our lives not realizing that, wow, any moment now it could all just go to pot. And that's what's been happening. Seeing a house burn down, that's pretty traumatic. One moment it's there, one moment it's not. And the earthquake, my God, I can't even put my head around this. The death toll at this point is said to exceed 200,000. 200,000 people. I remember back in 76, I think, there was an earthquake in China that eventually had a death toll of, I believe, 250,000 people. And the way that happened, because China was such a secretive society back then, it was just kind of released in spurts. So at first, maybe 5 people died, then it was 100, then it was 1,000, then it was 25,000. It just kept going up and up. But this was something that in the early hours, early days, we knew that this was going to be something truly horrible. And the complete lack of infrastructure, complete lack of government down there has made the rescue recovery completely challenging. Just doesn't do it justice. It's almost impossible. One thing good that's come out of this is generosity of a lot of people. People here at the radio station have been pitching in, and lots of people I know also have been making donations, doing whatever it is they can. Obviously, it's not enough, because we can't prevent the tragedy that's happened. But it's the best we can do at the moment, the best we know how to do, until we figure out a way to do better. So it's all a learning process for everybody. But what I'd like to encourage people to do, if you have not already, make a donation someplace, whether it's by text, whether it's on a website, whether it's in person, however it is you can do it. We all can at some point. That's one thing I think this drives home more than anything, how lucky we are to live in the screwed up society that we live in. But at least we have certain things that a large part of the rest of the world does not have. And in a situation like this, where you just see something happening so close to home, and it really is close to home. Remember the Haitian boat people, they get here on rafts with no power from the island, seeking a better life, risking their existence just for that trip. It's not far away at all, yet it's a completely different world. And there's a lot that can be said as far as why there's such inequity in the first place, why that world even exists, and how it can be made better perhaps in the future. Maybe this is something that can result in something positive. Maybe the world can get together and rebuild the country and make it self-sustaining, instead of just standing back and watching and seeing just how bad it can possibly get. There's no excuse in the world for a country as desperately poor as Haiti and so many other countries in other parts of the world to continue in that state when we obviously have the means to make it better. All right. I'd like to introduce in the studio special guest from Off the Hook. Dot Red is here.
Hello.
Welcome. This is your first time in WUSB, isn't it?
Yes, it's cool to be here.
It's quite a place. It really is. Yeah. A lot of history has gone on here. Yeah. That chair that you're sitting in right now was Richard Nixon sat in that chair. Yeah.
I can only imagine.
That's what I wanted to say. And nobody can prove that he didn't, so there. So what do you think of this whole earthquake thing? It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a very sad thing. But like you pointed out, about there are some positives. And one thing that I look at and I'm somewhat thankful about is the amount of attention and effort that is being poured into the country. I mean, mm-hmm. There's lots of criticism going on about how it's being exercised. But compared to how little the world could have done, it is kind of fantastic to
see. Well, yeah, it's something that I think is you have to do to realize the importance of it. And it's a personal thing, you know. Just making that contribution is kind of your way of saying how grateful you are that you survived, and that you want to share that good fortune with other people in far less fortunate situations. It's really frustrating seeing how mind-bogglingly slow it is getting things to the right people, getting aid, getting food, getting medication. But you have to realize it's complete mayhem and anarchy. There are no roads, there are no ports. The airport is in shambles. And yeah, it's been a week now. It's almost exactly a week, and you would think that something would have been developed by then, you know, in that period of time. But I don't know. It's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen on the news, I thought the U.S. Marines were there, and from my understanding is they are capable of, you know, demolishing obstacles to get around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing is, are you demolishing obstacles that have people underneath them? And what kind of reaction will that get? There's all kinds of considerations, plus people just aren't familiar with the area. It happens so fast. That's really, I think everyone's trying. I know there's a lot of confusion and crossed references and things like that. People are not working in the most efficient way possible. We need to change that, obviously.
Maybe that is part of the lack of organization. For instance, if certain paths need to be demolished for a way to get to different parts of the city, then maybe that's where they should have started looking for people that might have been trapped, so they could get those areas out of the way first.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that that has been very frustrating, I think, for the rescuers and, of course, for the people who are victims of this, is getting food to them, because they've been going for so long without anything. And how do you do that without starting all kinds of mayhem on the streets? If you just drive a truck up with a lot of food on it, it's going to get mobbed. There's going to be all kinds of people trying desperately to survive, and you can't blame them. We'd be doing the same thing. Anybody would be. So the situation, I think, you know, mankind has had enough time to figure out ways of doing this, but how do you distribute things to crowds of desperate people in a way where they won't kill each other and the people that are giving them the material?
Self-organization. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, people stand on a line and don't get disorderly. But in order for people to do that, they need to have trust in the system that they're online waiting to get help from.
Right.
So, you know, on the one hand, you know, you could say that they need to be more orderly, but on the other hand, whoever is providing the help needs to make sure that they've established a reputation.
I mean, it's easy to say people should be orderly, but
it's the other side as well. You know,
yeah,
the people
you,
giving
you
the
survive
help.
A couple of days without food or water or shelter and see how orderly you can be, how any of us can be. You know, we're no better. We're no better as a society. We think we are. We believe that we'll hold up and be stoic and all that. But, you know, looking at these people down there, I admire them. More than most any other group of people I've seen, because they're still surviving with their dignity after all this time, after not having so much. And I've seen all the newscasts where people are expressing concern about riots at night and about security. There was one point where doctors were ordered to leave a makeshift hospital because there was no security for them, and they were worried about what would happen at night. So they were forced to leave patients that needed their attention because the authorities, whatever the authorities were, we can't figure out who it was that actually issued these orders. They were concerned that somebody would get hurt in the mayhem. And there wasn't any mayhem. That's the thing. People were acting very heroically, I think, just basically being patient. I mean, of course, things have changed as time goes on. There's more disorder. In fact, I hate to say it. No, actually, I don't hate to say it, but people with guns are causing problems. Yeah, rampaging youths with guns are the ones causing people to panic and run for their lives and things like that. They're the ones stealing supplies from people who need them more and I guess, selling them and horrible things like that. And the people who are just trying to survive, they've been models to look after as far as how to keep going somehow. So there's been a lot of, I think, undue attention, undue anticipation of disorder when such disorder really took a very long time to finally arrive. And I just think there are so many other ways that the situation could have been dealt with that would have helped more people. I mean, obviously, the vast majority of people can't be helped no matter what, but one thing I think we do owe everybody down there is some sense of hope. And, you know, it's funny, we were at a fast food establishment yesterday. I'm not going to name any names, but I came up with the idea, and tell me if you think this is a silly idea, because, you know, it's one of these places that has barrels of peanuts still on the shelves.
Oh, now I know who it is.
Well, you might know who it is, but not everybody knows. So all these peanuts in barrels that are free for the taking, they're meant to snack on. Now imagine, the concern has been, how do we dump food on all these people without hurting them? How do we have supply points without people killing each other to get to them? You have all these peanuts in shells. that you could drop from all kinds of aircraft, and you can drop lots of them all over the place. They're small. They won't hurt you when they hit you, if they hit you, and they'll be spread out all across fields and streets and things like that. I mean, yeah, it sounds ridiculous. You're laughing. You're laughing. That's, I feel ridiculous even suggesting it, but maybe some simple solution like that might actually give people enough strength to survive until the real supplies get there.
Two things.
Yeah.
One, have you ever had a rain of peanuts from at least 50 feet falling
on
your
head? No, I haven't.
I'm sure that's not pleasant.
The terminal velocity of a peanut, though, I don't think is that I mean, it's not like a stone. They don't hurt that much. I don't know. I'm willing to have peanuts dropped on me from an airplane to prove whether or not this holds water or whatnot.
But the second thing is, very recently I remember hearing on the news about the military or whoever it is that's helping to bring supplies to people in Haiti,
right,
that they were dropping food out of helicopters and not landing, just dropping the food, you know, supplies all throughout the crowds, and that the crowd was getting, and lots of people were being upset. They felt their dignity was being diminished. That, you know, they were saying, why are you treating us like dogs?
Uh-huh.
Just throwing bones at us or, you know, whatever.
Well, what were they throwing? Were they actually throwing bones at them?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that's just a metaphor, you know, dogs, bones. You know,
uh-huh. I don't think very many people down there would see that as a loss of dignity to have supplies drop from an airplane to help them. I can't imagine that. And at some point, you got to let go of a certain degree of dignity. I certainly would. But it's an idea. You know, it's one thought. But there's got to be other ways of doing what we're doing down there because it wasn't very effective. And it's an impossible situation. I realize, but it's got to be a better way of doing it.
I think it just comes to preparation beforehand, that we set up the infrastructure to respond to disasters wherever they may be.
Yeah, so it's not our infrastructure. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about an earthquake and whatnot, then you expect infrastructure to be destroyed. Therefore, it should be mobile. Whether you're talking about FEMA over here or the Red Cross, but just some sort of a plan that then is publicly known and, you know, the time, how long it takes to get various help to whatever regions, so people have an idea of what to expect and how to react.
Right, but it's a different country, so...
Well, the Red Cross is international.
Yeah, but again, the country has to coordinate this, and right now there is no government down there. It's complete anarchy, that's what makes it so difficult. You know, I guess you could invade the country and take it over and start running things right, but that raises all kinds of other issues that we're very familiar with. Okay, I want to do something. I want to actually show people how this works. I'm using my cell phone now, and I'm going to make a donation live on the air to text number 90999. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to type in – I think you have to do it in all caps, but maybe not. I'm going to type the word Haiti, H-A-I-T-I, and I'm going to send it to that particular phone number or that particular text number, and it's been sent. And what will happen is it'll process, and then you'll get a text message back. Sometimes it's right away. Sometimes it'll take a few minutes. I think it's right away. And the text message will say, let's see what it says here. It says, to confirm your $10 donation to Red Cross Haiti relief efforts, reply with yes in all caps, and reply help in all caps for help, or visit redcross.org. So I'm going to reply with yes in all caps because that's what it said to do. And we will get another text from that. Okay, I've sent that reply already. It's this easy. This is how simple it is to make a donation. It gets billed to your cell phone. And of course, they don't get the money till you pay your cell phone bill. That's
well, how much money is being donated? Some people might be wondering how much money is tacked onto their bill.
Excuse me, I got a message. Let's see what the message says this time. Actually, I got two messages. Okay. it says, thanks, $10 charged to your phone bill for Red Cross Haiti relief. Reply help for help. Reply stop to cancel. Et cetera, et cetera. And also, let's see what we have here. You have spent $30 so far this month on Haiti relief text donations. So apparently there's a $30 max per user. Yeah, so I don't know if I can increase that. I'm trying to figure out a way to increase that, because that would be nice.
You might just have to go onto their website and then just donate directly.
But if you want to donate more than that, obviously you can go to www.redcross.org and donate that way. The money will take a while to get to them if it's through your cell phone. They have enough to spend right now to get supplies down there. It's going to be an ongoing process. The money will be needed in the future as well as in the present. So I wouldn't let that keep you from doing it. The thing that's amazing about this is how easy it is. On a website, you have to enter credit card information. You have to do all kinds of verification and things like that. This is just a couple of keystrokes, and you've donated a certain amount. Hopefully, they can raise the limit so it's more than $30 per person. But imagine if everybody did do $30, you know, $10 a day or whatever. That would be significant. It already has been significant. Millions and millions of dollars have been raised in this manner alone. So that's kind of cool. Unprecedented, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, just think about it. If only, say, a million people were to donate the maximum of $30, then you have $30 million right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't take a lot. As long as everybody tries to give a little before you know it, you have a massive amount of support.
Yeah. And, you know, I've mentioned this to a few people, and people have said, oh, okay, because of that, I'm going to donate right now. And they, you know, it's that easy. You get people to do this extremely simply. And I bet before the night is over, somebody is going to walk up to me and say, Emmanuel, because of what you said on the radio, I made that text donation to 90999. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. There is other news going on. Not to take away from this. Actually, one more thing about the whole Haiti situation. And again, this is a shortened program, so we don't really have enough time to get into it. We will be able to take phone calls next week when there is no basketball game and we have a full hour. But just one more horrible aspect to this whole story. Two words, Pat Robertson. Yes. Pat Robertson, the evangelical Christian who once suggested God was punishing Americans with Hurricane Katrina, has come up with a sequel to that. He says a pact to the devil brought on the devastating earthquake in Haiti. Shouldn't it be pact with the devil?
Yeah.
You can't even get that right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he's the host of the 700 Club. He blamed the tragedy on something that happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people might not want to talk about it. That's not going to stop him. The Haitians were under the heel of the French, you know, Napoleon III and whatever, he said on his broadcast last Wednesday. And they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. And you know, the Haitians revolted and got themselves free. But ever since, they have been cursed by one thing after the other. Okay, a couple of things here. First of all, Pat, you know, if you make a pact with the devil, generally it means that you live a very happy life here on Earth until you die. Then you go and hang out with the devil, and that's a real bummer. So, you know, that's why when you cash in your chips at the end of your life, like you're about to do, hopefully, that's when you meet your maker and your destructor or whatever.
I just have one big problem with that, and that's how can millions of people, every single person in some country, just make the same pact with the devil.
Yeah, it's when you start analyzing these things and thinking about them a little bit, they don't make any sense. But it's still offensive as hell. And this guy, you know, imagine the whole Tiger Woods thing. Look what he lost simply by having some affairs. All right, a lot of affairs, but he lost his. Maybe his career. He lost all these endorsements, sponsorships, things like that. His personal life is completely screwed up, and people don't want to be seen with him anymore. Doesn't this guy deserve at least that for saying these horrible, horrible, insensitive things in the wake of such tragedy? I mean, any station that has the 700 Club needs to be picketed and boycotted, and so the sponsors that give money to this horrible organization that supports this kind of thing. You know, it's freedom of speech is one thing, but when someone says something horrible like this, you have to react with your own freedom of speech and not just brush it under the rug and say, oh, well, that's Pat Robertson for you. No, these words really, really hurt a lot of people and are completely insensitive and cruel, and we should not be giving somebody like that such an audience, such a way of reaching so many people, and maybe turning other people into such ugly creatures as himself. I don't know. It's just it really bugs me to see people given a forum for this kind of thing.
Incidentally, Tiger Woods might actually be making a comeback in a
while. I hope so. I hope so, because all he did was, I don't know, act with some indiscretion.
I'm not big on
it. Hurt
golf,
his family, it hurt himself, so. But it's got nothing to do with the game, it's got nothing to do with the sponsorship. But
I mean, I'm not big on golf, so I can't say what the name of the tournaments are, but I have heard about discussion that he might be coming back during one of these larger tournaments.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. So I mean, we'll he should see. Be. It's
we'll
what he's
see.
Good
we'll
at.
See. Well, no, he did lose a lot of sponsorship, though.
But he didn't say anything that was horrible to a whole nation or a whole lot of people, and didn't impugn anyone's reputation except for his own. You know, let the guy live his own life as long as it doesn't hurt other people. This hurts other people. All right, something else which is going to hurt other people. Oh, my God. I cannot believe Democrats. I really can't. What is wrong with them? You think they're new to politics. You think they've never done it before. They've completely screwed up this election in Massachusetts. Now, in case you haven't been paying attention, Ted Kennedy, who held the seat for many, many years and who died fairly recently, his seat is up for grabs. And, you know, I know the Republicans are jumping on this because they jump on things in unison. And they say, it's not his seat, it's the people's seat. They will say that. You will see them saying this in perfect meter, you know, time just exactly the same as everybody else. Yes, it's not his seat, it's the people's seat. But, you conservative wackos, he was elected to serve a six-year term in 2006. 2006 to 2012. So, technically, it is his seat that's being up for grabs right now. It's his seat. He's no longer around to hold the seat, so somebody has to take it. But if in 2012 you refer to it as his seat, then you would have a point, because it's an election then when he would be running if he was still around. So anyway, point is, they're having a special election today to figure out who's going to take over the seat. And the Democrat was way ahead. Yeah, way ahead. There was a foregone conclusion that Martha Coakley, who is the Democratic Attorney General of the state, was going to kick Scott Brown's ass, State Senator Scott Brown. What she did was not really campaign at all, because she just sort of assumed that she'd get the seat because she was a Democrat. And that kind of stupidity, it's really nerve-wracking, because in so doing, she has now blown it to the extent where this guy is ahead on the day of the election. And what happens if he wins? If he wins, then he's a Republican senator. And that means the Democrats no longer have that 60-40 majority. Now, you may say they have a 59-41 majority, which sounds like a majority, right? But Republican tactics mean that everything that they don't agree with, they're simply going to filibuster and prevent any kind of debate from happening. So it's basically sabotaging the entire process, and you need the 60 votes to prevent them from doing that. Now, these guys, they're so unified, and they're such a hive mind that they just can be relied upon to do this and not have any dissent in their ranks. Whereas Democrats, you saw what a pain it was getting health reform to the state it was now because of conservative Democrats. Yeah, where are the liberal Republicans? They don't exist. You see? So if you have all these Republicans, you know they're all going to vote the same way. Democrats, you can't be that sure about. So anyway, what's going to happen if they actually have blown this election and if Scott Brown wins tonight? It means pretty much healthcare is dead, I think. What they could do, what the Democrats could do, is rush it through. But I think that would be an even bigger mistake for them to pull this off, because that would be seen as sneaky. That would be seen as backdoor politics. That would be seen,
get revoked.
It probably would get legislated out. Yeah, it probably would. And basically, this could be the end of any hope that Obama had of making change, real change. I mean, you saw this was a tentative step. Yeah, we know healthcare reform kind of sucked. It wasn't anywhere near as good as it could have been. it didn't start off that way. It started off much better and kept getting whittled down by all these compromises and all these conservative lawmakers that refused to back down. So eventually we got something that is a mere shadow of what it could have been, but it was a step. It was a step. And those people who refuse to support it because it's not all the steps at once, they're pretty much the biggest fools of all. Because the Republicans, you expect them to do this. You expect them to block any kind of change. You do. But people who support change should not be blocking the steps that get you there. You see what I'm saying? It's you can't get there all in one step. It takes multiple steps. And this was the first step. Now, if this happens today, that could be the end of it. It could be the end of it. And I would not blame Obama at all for just being super cautious from this point on, not wanting to ruffle any feathers, and just being kind of middle of the road, because he is a politician. That's something we have to remember. He wants to get reelected in 2012. And, you know, you keep pissing off the conservatives, the angry white men out there. And I don't like saying the angry white men, but every time I see these tea parties, every time I see these town hall meetings where these super loudmouth, intimidating people are screaming their guts out about how angry they are, it tends to be middle-aged white men or even young white men. It's kind of scary. And white women, too. I never see people of minority groups getting this upset about the changes that are happening. And I guess that's what the white people are afraid of, is that their world is coming to an end. It's insane. It's insane to be this scared of a little bit of a change in the way we do things. You know, I keep hearing how angry the voters are. What exactly is it they're angry about? What is it that's being taken? Their taxes might be going up a little bit? You know, is that what they're translating any kind of health care reform into increased taxes? Well, even if that is true, and I don't know if it is true, but even if it is that such a bad thing? Is that something that really is going to affect you as much as someone who doesn't have any health insurance at all is affected by that fact? You know, I have to wonder, is it just the loudest voices that get listened to? And in this case, I think it might be.
You know, a lot of people seem to be talking about the problem as being the thing about, you know, the Democrats having the supermajority or losing the supermajority. To me, it kind of just highlights another problem that's really going on behind the scenes that no one really seems to be talking as much about, and that's this whole partisan politics thing. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever happened to just voting based on your actual opinion instead people are voting based on what club they're a part of.
Right, right.
You know, if that wasn't the case, if people just, you know, voted based on their actual opinions, and if politicians actually tried to represent the people of whatever state they're trying to represent, you know, liberals, moderate, and conservative, mm-hmm. you may not even see this problem.
Or, you know, if maybe you had more of a choice than just Democrat, Republican, because there's really not that much of a difference when you look at it. But in this particular case, well, there is. There is a difference insofar as changes in various legislation, taxing the rich a little bit more than the poor, health care, building up the infrastructure a little bit. And you have to wonder, you know, the right wing is very upset by this. So those people who say it doesn't go far enough, well, look at who's upset by it. Look at who's upset the most. It's the conservatives who don't want this change. They desperately don't want this change. So that must be a good thing, right?
Well, you know, actually, you're saying mentioning the more options mm-hmm. is pretty interesting because, you know, over the past few years, I have been hearing more about independents running, whether it's they're leaving some parties or just other independents just coming up out of the woodwork and getting more offices here and there around the country. And I look at that, I kind of, you know, hope that several years down the line that independent politicians, for instance, will be far more common.
As long as they're not like Lieberman, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because that sure didn't work out very well, did it?
But I'm saying is that then this whole partisan thing kind of becomes a bit less important mm-hmm. than it is right now. Right now, you know, this is a big problem. You have two groups basically doing a power play. And, you know,
the Democrats don't seem to know how to do a power play, yeah. though. They have the majority, what you call the supermajority.
Yeah, they have the majority.
And they can't do anything. They're still crippled. They're still crippled by these loudmouth Republicans. You know, I just wish they'd just take a back seat, let the change happen, see if it works. If it doesn't work, then you go back somehow, you fix things. But, you know, it's obviously not working the way it is now. So keeping things the way it is now, That's not the way to do it.
See, communication is also a bit of a problem. Lots of people, for instance, when they heard about these the healthcare reform changes, you have lots of the people that you described as being angry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were under the impression that the government would be holding death panels.
I know. They believe what they're told. The death panels and what else? What are some of the other myths that
extremely high taxes.
Extremely high taxes, Medicare being cut or something like that, which is – Medicare is socialized medicine. It's insane, just some of the things that are out there. And I don't know. How do you counter that? You need communication. You need a way of reaching people. And they really seem to have blown it in Massachusetts because they had an opportunity to really have some kind of
Massachusetts of all places, too.
Yeah, a mandate of sorts. And this worries me because if this is the kind of reaction that we see against the tentative little steps towards change that we've taken so far, they're going to be panicking about the midterm elections later on this year.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be...
So who's going to want to make any change now? Everyone's going to want to go back to Reaganomics and things.
Well,
you know?
During the midterm elections, you could possibly have the supermajority returned if it's lost today.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could go worse for the Democrats. And that's what's going to be, in my opinion, the big issue that's going to happen during the midterm elections. It's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to tell you this, folks. If this election is lost in Massachusetts, if it goes Republican, and you know, the bitter irony, Ted Kennedy wanted more than anything else health care reform, and to have his seat, and yes, it is still his seat because he has it till 2012. if that's the seat that kills it, you know, because some pickup driving guy, and he is a pickup truck driving guy, who posed in a centerfold, by the way. You know about this?
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Full frontal nudity and everything. Now, if he was a woman, I don't think he'd be allowed to continue.
Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah, as far as
conservative goes, that's pretty darn strange.
Yeah,
they
turn a blind eye in certain situations. It's incredible. That's something I just saw on TV.
That's scandalous in some places.
I got to say, next week, you do not want to listen next week if this happens, because I'll be in a foul mood. You know, I may even use foul language. I can only be pushed so far, and this is to see such.
You can
to
always
see
have
come
hope.
So close.
You can, if it fails today, you can always have hope that during the midterm elections it could be returned.
Maybe.
And then maybe the health care bill, if it's destroyed, will come back.
All right, listen, we're out of time. Can you believe how fast that went?
Yeah.
That's what happens when you have an abbreviated show. Basketball's coming up next. Stay tuned to the news and what's going on in the world. Don't forget to donate to the Haiti Relief. 90999 is the text number, or www.redcross.org. We'll see you next week, and we'll take phone calls next week. Our email address, otw@2600.com. Have a good night.
Lágrima de oro, tú no tienes la culpa, mi amor, de tanto cachondeo. Tú no tienes la culpa, mi amor, vámonos de jaleo. Ay, por la calle llorando, lágrima de oro. Ay, por la calle brotando, lágrima de oro. Llegó el cancodrilo y super chango, toda la vaina de Maracaibo. En este mundo hay mucha confusión, suenan los tambores de la rebelión. Suena mi pueblo, suena la razón, suena el guaguancó, baila mi mamá, suenan los tambores de la rebelión. Geral pela ponta canhota, teus tratos abulos dominam para mão, contra e firmo, preso no meu
Advertencia que le hacemos. ¿Cómo? Si no dejen pasar a los pepenadores, algo grave